My name is Marilyn Winemaster. I'm the Secretary Membership Director of CHICA Canada and Long-Term Care Interest Group, now off the chair. This lecture and the next one are being broadcast to the world as live teleclasses through Weber Teleclass. Also, that our first lecture with Colette is being sponsored by Diversa, Inc. So without further ado, so I can give Colette her time slot, all of it, I'd like to introduce Colette, and you'll have to excuse me with my glasses. Colette Ouellette. Did I say that right, Colette? Not a bone of French in me. Colette is an RN, a Bachelor of Nursing, CIC, is a network coordinator for the Champlain Infection Control Network in Ottawa. She has had the opportunity in this position to develop the Champlain program from the ground up as one of the first four infection control networks funded by the province of Ontario. Champlain helped to set the path for the remaining 10 networks in the province. That's enough? She says that's enough. She's and a co-chair right there this year of the scientific program.
Okay. Thank you. That's enough. Because my disclaimer, I am paid by Public Health Ontario. I wish I was paid by other people as well. I'm not. So that's the only disclaimer I have for you. I'm going to talk to you today about making decisions about cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization in long-term care. It's a huge topic, and I've brought it down, and I hope to get everything in the 45 minutes that we have allotted. The title is Safety in the Fields, because we have a whole Saskatchewan farming theme, and we are talking about an issue of resident safety, so I think that fit quite nicely. I need to acknowledge a few things. First of all, much of the information that I've gathered came from long-term care facilities in my region who were so generous with giving me information and access to their facilities to look at the practices that are taking place out in the field on the ground in reality. And the reality practices don't always match up with the best practices, as we will see as we go through this. I also need to acknowledge Karen Klinker, because Karen did this presentation several weeks ago, and it matched what I wanted to do so nicely that I asked her permission to use it, and she said, you have carte blanche permission to use whatever you want, and so I stole pretty much the whole thing, so I have to acknowledge that with her. Angela McAlpine, another individual, had done a presentation that helped to seed some of the information that I have here. And the references that I've used are primarily an Ontario reference from PIDAC, which is the Provincial Infectious Diseases Advisory Committee, who has a best practice on cleaning, sterilization, and disinfection. But I also looked extensively at the CHICA Audit Toolkit, which is available to all CHICA members and which is an excellent resource if you're looking at your cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization program. And then nationally, I looked at the CSA guidelines and internationally, the CDC guidelines. There is a wealth of information out there for you to try and interpret. But let's bring it to the level of long-term care. We're going to start by talking about Spalding's criteria, because you've got to start at the beginning. And that is truly the beginning of our decision-making process in this area. We're going to highlight the potential weaknesses of cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization programs. And throughout the talk, I have slides with keys at the bottom, because I felt that that was key information for things you need to think about or look for in your own facility. And we're going to look at the parameters of an audit that you might want to conduct. So, the Spalding criteria. About 30 years ago, a microbiologist by the name of Earl Spalding wanted to come up with a system where decisions could be made about medical equipment that made it easy to decide what kind of disinfection and whether or not they needed sterilization take place to keep them safe. And he based it on a risk of that piece of equipment when it's applied to the resident or patient. So he categorized everything as being non-critical or semi-critical or critical, and it helps us to determine the level of reprocessing that's required going forward. So non-critical equipment, and many of you know this, so I'm not going to take a lot of time here, but it touches only intact skin, not intact mucous membranes, not mucous membranes of any kind, only intact skin, or it doesn't touch the client or resident directly at all, but it's medical equipment. Divided into non-critical patient care items and non-critical environmental surfaces. And sometimes that designation or distinction's a little bit gray. And it's important that we think about it, because when we're talking about cleaning and disinfection of surfaces, sometimes that distinction tells us who is going to be fulfilling their role in disinfecting the surface. Think for a moment about a commode versus a toilet. One, we might consider patient care equipment because it's bought to care for the patient or resident at their bedside. The other is part of the facility. It gets built in. It's plumbed in. So it's more environmental. But they really fulfill the same function. And we really need to know who's doing what in terms of disinfecting those surfaces. So it's a bit gray. Reprocessing for these things involves cleaning followed by low-level disinfection, but in some cases cleaning alone is fine, and things like an oxygen tank or cylinder would not require disinfection, but certainly if it's been going from one resident room to another, then it would require some cleaning. So examples of non-critical equipment that were identified to me by the facilities that I've spoken to in long-term care include the list that I've got here: oximeters, glucometers, electronic thermometers, hydrotherapy tanks, lift slings, ECG machine leads, IV poles, wheelchairs, call bells, bedpans, urinals, the commode I just mentioned, and fingernail equipment that's used by only one person fits into this category, requiring only low-level disinfection. Semi-critical equipment is equipment that comes in contact with non-intact skin, open wounds, rashes, that sort of thing, or mucous membranes, but it doesn't penetrate them, and that's critical. That's another level. So reprocessing in this area involves cleaning, followed by high-level disinfection at a minimum, but in all cases, really, sterilization would be preferred. Not in all cases will the equipment withstand sterilization, so this is a slightly lower level that's still considered acceptable. This is not frequently used in long-term care, but some of the equipment that people described to me were laryngoscopes that were on crash carts, respiratory therapy equipment, nebulizer cups, if they're being reused, ear syringe nozzles, ear cleaning equipment in general, and fingernail equipment that's used on multiple residents. Actually requires a higher level of reprocessing. So think about what's happening in your own facility. Critical equipment, this is the area where the equipment is being used in a way that confers a high level of risk to the resident if it's contaminated with any microorganism. It enters sterile tissues, including the vascular system, and reprocessing therefore requires cleaning followed by sterilization. In long-term care, the most common equipment in this category is foot care equipment. And there's been a real debate about foot care equipment over time. In fact, the Canadian guidelines that came out from Health Canada in the 90s suggested that it didn't require sterilization, that high-level disinfection would be satisfactory. That is no longer acceptable. Sterilization is the standard required for foot care equipment. Other things that you may have in a larger facility include dental equipment and neuro pinpricks if neurology assessments are being done in your facility. So we talk about that. That's a quick overview of Spalding because it guides our next decisions, and those are decisions about how to manage the equipment, how to reprocess it when we're using it between residents. And I made a little graph, and what it shows is what we always see. The non-critical equipment requires either low-level or intermediate-level disinfection, and that level of disinfection will kill the enveloped viruses and the vegetative bacteria that are really easy to kill. And if it's a disinfectant product that reaches the intermediate level, it also covers some fungi. In PIDAC document that I refer most to, we don't even talk about the intermediate level anymore. It really is to do with non-critical equipment, and many of the products that we have available now have extended spectrum of action, so we just talk about low-level disinfection at that point. High-level disinfection will kill mycobacteria, all the tuberculin bacteria, and non-enveloped viruses, which are more difficult to kill. And sterilization, of course, is a destruction of all forms of microbial life. So that's the important distinction as we go across. But what you see at the very beginning of that arrow is the word clean, because you can't accomplish any of these things without having equipment that has been cleaned. Disinfection is a two-step process. The items can't be disinfected or sterilized until they are clean, and that's removing all organic and inorganic material, which is absolutely necessary to do any disinfection. And before you clean, gross soil has to be removed. Now, this concept came home to me at one point in my life, in my family's life, and the picture of these runners brought it all back when I had one of those aha moments that I will never forget, the concept that you have to remove gross soil before you can clean, you have to clean before you can disinfect. And the story involved my daughter, who was a bit of a tomboy, and we moved to a home that had a ravine at the back. And in the spring, she thought it would be great fun after the waters had sort of gone aside and it was relatively safe for her to be out in the ravine. She wanted to catch frogs and snakes. I was not big on the frog and snake catching activity, but while I was out one day, my husband said, "Oh, you go ahead, honey, and have fun in the ravine." The day before she did that, I bought her a brand new pair of pink running shoes. I wasn't really into the frogs and snakes. I was hoping for frills. She took her pink running shoes and off she went into the ravine. And when I got back at the end of the day, sitting at the back door were a pair of shoes that looked much like that. They were pink underneath, but really otherwise, this was an exact replica of what I saw. And I was so upset. They were $30 shoes, and I thought, I can't throw them out. I have to get these shoes clean. But they were horrible, and for all I knew, there was a frog or a snake amongst the mud. So I gingerly picked them up by their laces and put them in the washing machine and threw it on heavy-duty cycle and let it run. Well, at the end of that, do you think I had clean runners to produce? No, I had dirty runners and I had a filthy washing machine. That's what I ended up with. You really have to remove soil before you can clean. There's no question about that. So when you clean, it's just removing the rest, the dust, the bit of soil that's left after you've removed gross soil, the foreign material. You can use soap and water. You can use detergents or enzymatics. Detergents are just synthetic agents that emulsify oils and suspend soil so that it can be washed away in the process of cleaning. They can contain surfactants that don't precipitate in hard water or protease enzymes that break down the proteins to release any of the protein material. And some contain whitening agents, so they're a great augmentation to our cleaning process. If you have an opportunity when you're cleaning, try to immerse the item you are cleaning completely in water, because likely you will be brushing it, and if you're brushing it out in the air, you're going to get material that's aerosolized and sprayed from it. So that will keep the aerosolization down. The cleaning might also be mechanical if you have things like ultrasonic washers, but I have to admit, amongst the facilities that I spoke to in the region, only one was using an ultrasonic washer, so I suspect that that's not particularly common in long-term care. You need to also think about caring for the cleaning tools. You can't just use that brush and scrub off the mud and put it aside and then get the next piece of equipment the next day and scrub off the mud and put it aside. That brush has to be cleaned off as well. So you want the equipment you are cleaning with to remain clean. An equipment that is going to be followed by disinfection, if it's not just to be cleaned, if you're actually following it by a disinfection process and you've got it wet with your cleaning, you need to rinse off the detergent because that could neutralize your disinfectant. You need to dry it because if things are soaking wet, you're going to dilute your disinfectant and it won't be as able to do its job. So here's my graph again with the same things, and just at the bottom I've listed some, not all, this is not an exhaustive list of the kinds of chemicals that you might use or processes that you might use to achieve the levels of disinfection or sterilization. And when you're choosing your disinfectant, you have to think about a few things. The disinfectant you choose should be cost-effective, right? Should have a long shelf life. If you're buying something that once it's opened, it's good for 24 hours, you're going to run into trouble because people will keep using it. Okay, so pay attention to the shelf life. It needs to be safe. It needs to be acceptable to the people using it. So if you have an opportunity to choose a new disinfectant product, and you have a selection of them, get the people involved who are actually going to be using it. That's critical. It should be compatible with the surfaces you use, and we'll talk about that in a second. Wrap it in action against microbes and have the broadest spectrum that's possible on the market. And it shouldn't have any residue because residue will leave behind films and actually make things harder to clean going forward. And critically, all disinfectants used in healthcare must have a DIN number from Health Canada. It's a registered product in Health Canada, and if it has a DIN on its label, you know that it's been tested against certain parameters, that you've got all of the information you require to make decisions in terms of contact time and that sort of thing. So look for a DIN number on your disinfectant. In the Chica Audit Toolkit, there's some really great tools, and this is one of the annexes that talks about considerations for selecting your products. When you're looking at that label, make sure that it shows the information that you're provided with the product. Make sure it shows the product's intended use, that it tells you how much of the active ingredient is present, where it should be used, directions including the types of instruments that could be cleaned or sanitized with this product. And I'll just make a note here now and say that there are many products that are low-level disinfectants that can also be used as cleaners or sanitizers. So the same product for two things. You just have to know that that's what you've got. The dilution or activation, if that's required, should be carefully noted. The mode of application and the minimum contact time. Contact time is another critical concept to know. If you've got a disinfectant product that requires 10 minutes of contact time and it evaporates in 3, you haven't disinfected your product. So know what your product has for minimum contact time. Now, of those products noted to me by the facilities I spoke to, I'm going to talk about some of the advantages and disadvantages. There is no perfect product, unfortunately. And I'm only talking about the alcohols, the chlorines, the accelerated hydrogen peroxide products, and the quats. There are others. And you have a golden opportunity in the next 2 to 3 days of finding out about all of them by talking to the experts who are in the vendor area in our exhibitor area, because those people know their products inside out, can tell you exactly what the pros and cons are, what its use could be, and what the application might be. Take advantage of that. In terms of alcohols, generally speaking, alcohols are used to clean some external equipment. So people get little pledgets and they clean off their stethoscopes and that sort of thing. It's non-toxic, it's low cost, it's pretty rapid action, and it doesn't stain. So that's all the good news about alcohol. Unfortunately, to do a complete disinfection, it takes 10 minutes of contact time, and alcohol evaporates. So you would be reapplying this, right? And then hoping that the concentration stays okay, because while it's evaporating, the concentration is changing. It's flammable. We know that from alcohol hand gels. It's a very poor cleaner. It doesn't clean things well. It's harmful to plastics. It hardens them, and it makes silicones brittle if it's used over time. And it's inactivated by organic material. So if you have the protein there, if you've got gross dirt there, then it's going to inactivate your alcohol. It can't disinfect. The other thing to make sure that you talk about in your facilities that I found in more than one facility is make sure that the people know that the alcohol hand rub you've provided to them, or the gels or the foams, they are not environmental cleaners. They're bad environmental cleaners. In fact, they have emollients in them, because they're meant for hands and skin, and they are not meant to clean off stethoscopes and other equipment that's used between residents. And unfortunately, I have found that that is taking place. Chlorines are another group of cleaners and disinfectants that can be used. We recommend them in blood spills to disinfect an area. They also are low cost. We're talking about, you know, you could get a bottle of Javex solution and dilute it to a point that you can use it. So it's low cost, rapid action, and obviously readily available. There are other products on the market that are chlorine-based that are excellent products as cleaner disinfectants. And again, you can look to our exhibitors to provide information on that. The downside to chlorines, despite being really good at what they do, they're very corrosive. They're also inactivated by organic material. They irritate skin and mucous membranes. They have to be used immediately once diluted. If you do use like a Javex solution in your facility and mix it with water to dilute it, you've got 24 hours to use it up. At that point, what's left has to be thrown away, and you need to make a new solution. And they have to be used in well-ventilated areas, because they emit sort of a noxious gas that's very irritating to some people. And it's a concern from an occupational health standpoint, for sure. The accelerated hydrogen peroxide products, they can be used for small hand contact surfaces. A lot of them come in wipes, so they're great for your care staff to be using on the equipment that goes from resident to resident. They can be used on room surfaces as well. They're safe for the environment. They break down into water and oxygen. Non-toxic, rapid action, available in a wipe, as I mentioned. They're active in the presence of organic material, which is great. And they're an excellent cleaner. In fact, many have a detergent sort of presence in them. They shouldn't be used, however, on copper or brass, carbon-tip devices, and anodized aluminum. So you can figure out there's really no perfect cleaner. You've got to know what the product is you're cleaning and what the product is you're cleaning with, and make sure that they go together well. Quats are the workhorse, the chemical that we've used for a very long time in healthcare settings, and they're used on floors and walls and furnishings. They can be used to clean a blood spill prior to disinfection. They can't be used to disinfect instruments. They're great in terms of being non-corrosive and non-toxic, and they're a good cleaner. Again, some detergent properties. Rinsing is not required for most quats. Generally, they have a narrow microbial spectrum, and that's a bit of a problem. And diluted solutions, unfortunately, have been shown in multiple reports in the literature to grow, to support microbial growth, and in fact, to be the cause of some healthcare-associated infections and outbreaks. They can be neutralized by various materials, including gauze and cottons. So you need to know what you're using to clean with as well if you're using a quat. Now, there are newer generation quats that have overcome some of these aspects that I've described, but really talk to the person that's selling you the product, that's representing the product, to understand it well. These are just some general considerations. So I have to talk about sterilization. Now, Marilyn was the one that asked me to come and do this, and she said, really concentrate on the disinfection side because there isn't much sterilization going on in long-term care. But that doesn't go along with what I found when I was in the field and talking to people and seeing what was out there. I felt that I really needed to discuss this. And I wonder if you would be willing to put up your hand if you are in a facility that sterilizes things. Yeah, so a small percentage, but enough that we need to cover this ground. Because remember, this is the highest risk area to your residents. So critical equipment must be sterilized. Absolutely, no question. Semi-critical equipment should be sterilized if it can withstand that. And you have to sterilize according to the manufacturer's instructions. So you should have those. So I went to one facility and there was a lovely sterilizer and I said, can we look over the manufacturer's instructions? They were nowhere to be found. Well, how did we know how to use this? Well, the person before told the person who's doing it now what to do, so they know exactly what to do. You'll see part of a picture of one sterilizer that actually had a note written on the sterilizer in a Sharpie pen. Please give me fluids. I don't function well without fluids, or something to that effect. I thought, okay, that's the instructions we have to use this machine. Oh, dear. There are indicators that must be used if you're sterilizing something. So there's mechanical indicators that are required, and that's the machine printing out something that tells you it reached this temperature and this much pressure for this much time, so it fulfilled the parameters of the cycle that it had to. If you can't get a printout, then your machine should have an electronic recording of that information. If you have neither one of those things, then you should be talking to your sterilizer manufacturer because you're going to try and get something attached to that sterilizer to allow you to do that. This is a requirement of sterilization. There are chemical indicators that should be used for instruments undergoing sterilization, and you can see in the picture that I took here that one of the chemical indicators that is intended to be on the outside of a package, an autoclave tape, that changes color when exposed to steam, has been used actually on the inside of the package. And that's not appropriate. That's not its intended use. There are internal chemical indicators that you can purchase, and you need to have those. So external and internal chemical indicators should be used. And all chemical indicators should be checked by the staff members prior to using the equipment, because sometimes they don't turn. And if they don't turn, you have to go through the sterilization process again because it didn't work. So in addition to that, that just tells us that that piece of equipment got put into a machine that was steamy. And some of those chemical indicators will change, you know, within 2 minutes of being exposed to steam. So it doesn't mean that sterilization took place. It means that there was some steam or there was some pressure or that sort of thing that's told by the indicator. To know, to be assured that you have actually sterilized something, you need to do a test where spores are present. And you need to know that those spores, after going through the sterilization process, don't grow. They won't germinate. They won't grow to become a live organism. So a medical device, actually, that's been sterilized shouldn't be used until you know you've got a negative biological indicator. Oh, that is not done well. That is done very poorly. And the standard now is that a biologic indicator should be used every day that the sterilizer is used. One of the policies I read had a biologic indicator, but their requirement was to use it once a month. So, you know, what if the machine went down on the next day? And for a month, they're sterilizing things and using them. Then what do you do? Well, you have to think about that, and you should have a procedure that tells you if that takes place, if for some reason the way I'm using my system, I only sterilize every 4 or 5 days. The biologic indicator takes 2 days to read. We're using the equipment in the meantime, and we find out, lo and behold, the biologic indicator is positive. It grows something. Darn it, that isn't sterilized. How do you go back and track who's had that equipment used on them? How do you pull the equipment that was in that load? Do you have a way to measure that, to monitor that, to recall that? That's all really important. And those chemical indicators, they're good to tell you that steam was there. They do not replace the biologic indicator. You do not know that sterilization has taken place without this. And we are very bad in what I've seen in doing biologic indicators. So I mentioned the sterilizers have to have a printout. They need maintenance and monitoring. And this is the sterilizer I told you about, you know, give me fluids before starting. It has some visual indicators at the bottom. I apologize for my photography skills. It's not that clear. But those little lights come on and off at a certain point. So when there's steam, it goes on. The pressure's up, a light goes on. Some are red, some are green, some are yellow. At the end, a light goes on to say, oh, we're all done. So if you had somebody standing and watching that machine, they might know that that machine had reached the parameters that are set within that machine. But if they walked away and came back and it was done, they have no idea. They have no idea that that machine did what it was supposed to do to achieve sterilization. This would not meet the standard that you need if you're sterilizing in your facility. The other thing that came up repeatedly is people saying, well, how long can we keep stuff that's sterilized? You know, if I put the date on it, is good for a week or a month or a year? Well, we don't really use that kind of date-related shelf life anymore. We go now by an event-related life. So if you have sterilized your equipment, your BI is good, your chemical indicators are good, everything looks great, you keep your equipment in its sterile packaging, and you store it properly, then it's good until you find out that the package is broken, got wet, torn, the tape came off. It can be assumed to be sterile from all of the tests that have been done. So that's good. As long as the integrity of the package is intact, we're in good shape. But there are issues around storage that you have to think about. So sterile items need to be stored in their sterile packaging until they're used, and they need to be handled and stored in a manner to prevent contamination. So they shouldn't be on the floor, and they shouldn't be under the sink because it's wet, and they can become moist. And once moisture penetrates through a packaging, organisms can follow. Storage areas need to meet specific requirements. They should be separate, or separate sterile and dirty things for sure. That it shouldn't be on open wooden shelving because that gets dusty and the shelves are porous and you can get moisture and that's not acceptable. So if you're going to have shelving, it has to be in a closed cupboard or have open wire style shelving. It needs to be free from vermin. There's some things that should go without saying, aren't there? Free from vermin, dust flies, not under or near ductwork or pipes, and there shouldn't be risk of tampering. So it needs to be in an area where people aren't going in, that aren't staff members knowing what they're doing and playing around. You've got to make sure that there's no sign of compromise within the packs. Reuse. Here's a question that came up. This particular sign, the two with the line through it, is on some equipment that you'll open. And there was some thinking when asked. Somebody said, well, that means you can use it twice, but then you have to discard it. So, you know, it's good for two uses, and then you have to discard it. It's not good for three. Well, in fact, that is not true. What it means is don't use it the second time. That's a single-use device when you see that on a package. The other thing that you might see that I've taken a picture of here is the note, sterile, single-use only. It's really clear on the package. Right? Small letters, but really clearly stated. So the problem is that the equipment gets separated from the package the minute it's opened. So you need to make sure that people who are responsible for managing your equipment know what equipment they're supposed to be managing. When they get that single-use pair of scissors down in their area where they're supposed to be reprocessing, they should stop it there. They shouldn't be reprocessing them. And if you could see very closely, there's actually rust on this pair of scissors. This is a single-use pair that the person, I was going to say the technician, but I'll explain that in a minute, the person who was reprocessing the equipment didn't know that it was single-use. She doesn't use the equipment. The packaging was somewhere on one of the floors in the units. She had no idea. It arrived on her desk, and from her desk, she went ahead and reprocessed it, assuming that it would be okay. Your reprocessing area, if you're doing sterilization, it should be a centralized area. And it should comply with all sorts of requirements that are listed in those documents that I started with. I'm not going to go into all the requirements. One point I do want to make, though, from my experience of going around, is centralized doesn't mean in a central room, in this case, the medical records room. That's not what they meant when they said in a centralized area. This is lovely, actually. I particularly like the flower, the orchid that's growing on the side of the file cabinet where sterilization is taking place. All of the equipment is easily accessible in the top drawer of the file cabinet. The equipment, actually, for reprocessing would come overnight by the PSW working nights, who'd collect up things from the various units and put them on the desk of the medical records person, who learned how to reprocess these items from the medical records person who had just retired. So there were several problems here. I'll tell you, the end of this story is that facility decided to stop sterilizing. But this is in... You know, with all the best intentions, this is the scene that we found when we went around looking to see what's happening out there. Your reprocessing area should be physical space that's separating where clean, disinfected, or sterile devices are stored, handled, and separate from client care or procedure rooms, obviously. The work surfaces should be easily cleanable. There should be a one-way workflow from dirty to clean. Portable fans should not be used because that just drags up dust and debris and moves the air around in a way that can contaminate things as you move along your process. And the sink, obviously, should be located near the work area. The situation I just described, the sink was in a room down the hall and around the corner. In a room that was supposed to be for, it was a multi-purpose room, I would say, for storage of phlebotomy equipment, for bringing residents in who needed their ears cleaned out, and for managing the vaccination fridge, as well as cleaning dirty equipment and hand washing. And that all took place in the same sink. So that wasn't a very good setup. This, again, is out of the CHICA document, the audit toolkit, the direction of workflow from clean to cleanest, right? Dirty to clean to cleanest. And lots of tips in there on supplies that you need and how far to consider things as you're moving along the process up to sterilization. Here's another picture that was taken for me from another facility. Now, this is what a room should look like. That's doing reprocessing of equipment, right? It flows beautifully, it's open, it's easily cleaned, they've got large workspaces and all of their equipment together. So to find out what's going on, you need to do a bit of auditing, and to make sure, even once you think you've got it figured out, that it stays going right, you need to repeat your auditing. It's really an important concept. To get the most out of your audit, you need to think about three areas. The policies and procedures that should exist in your facility. You need to talk to the staff that are doing the work, and I'm talking about staff who are charged specifically with reprocessing, like the medical records technician, and also the staff that are out on the floors. So who's cleaning stuff from resident to resident? Is it the housekeeper? Is it the PSW? Is it your nurse, your RPN? You need to talk to the people to find out what they're doing. And you've got to do a walkabout. You absolutely do a walkabout. One walkabout we did, we found this on a door. I just about lost my mind. I said, there's an ice machine in that janitor's room? Well, no, it was just they hadn't changed the label on the door. But you find some crazy stuff out there when you walk around. Yeah. You do a risk assessment, so why audit? You want to familiarize yourself with what's happening, not just what you think is happening, but really get out there and look at what's happening. Make sure that the infection prevention and control standards are being followed. Identify the deficiencies. Develop an action plan to address the deficiencies and implement the changes that you need to implement. Make sure the right people are doing the right job in the right way as you talk to them. And reinforce the best practices and standards at every opportunity. Take a look for equipment that tends to move from place to place. Ask questions about who cleans that and how does the person using it know it's clean? Do they have a tagging system? So once it's clean, they put a clean tag on it, and when it's used, they pull the tag off? Does it actually go sit in a clean room? Typically, no, this stuff is in the hallway, right? Just gets moved to where it's needed. But you have to have a system to know it's clean, and you've got to know who's cleaning it as well. Do your risk assessment, find out who's doing the cleaning, what are they cleaning, where is it happening, how are they doing it, and what about loaners? What about equipment that comes in with other people? So your foot care nurse comes in with all of her foot care equipment. Is that being sterilized? Well, some might say, I don't know, but, you know, she knows what she's doing. I'm sure it's fine. But you can't kind of run your system on a hope and a promise. you really have to know what's happening. And you are ultimately responsible for the care of the residents, whether the equipment comes in with somebody else or lives in your environment. So you have to know that. Look at the documents you have available. Make sure that they define accountability. If somebody isn't designated to be accountable for something and responsible for something, it won't get done. If you ask about that rolling stock and say, who cleans it, and the nurse points to the PSW and the PSW points to the housekeeper, you've got a problem. Somebody needs to be held responsible for what happens. You need to make sure that the manufacturer's guidelines are available, not lost or taken home by the person who retired. The policies and procedures are posted and accessible. You want to make sure of that. The staff are trained. The staff are trained properly and not trained by the predecessor, because we just get generational error when that happens. We need appropriate training programs, which exist. The staff doing this must be trained. Staff interviews. Ask them, what equipment are you cleaning in that basket that I have here? That there, the top instrument is another pair of those disposable scissors that have come to be reprocessed and would ultimately have been sterilized. So what equipment are you cleaning, disinfecting, and sterilizing? What's the process you're using to clean reused equipment in your area? Do you have access to the manufacturer's written instructions? Do you know what the manufacturer says for maintenance of this item? Do you know how to take it apart or where the crevices are and what things you should do to make sure as you're cleaning it on the ward between residents that you know what you're cleaning? Do you know that some glucometers can't be cleaned by some products because it actually affects the results of the glucometer test? You need to know these things. What reprocessing training have you had? And when did you have it? Is it recent? Keeping up to date, and then take a walk. Look for the ice machines in the janitor's rooms. Look for the equipment that's being cleaned and disinfected. Look for the proper workflow. Look to see if sterilized supplies are being stored appropriately. As you can see in this picture, it doesn't meet the standard with the wooden shelves and so on. Ask the staff if what you think is happening is really happening as you walk around. Ask them to walk you through the flow. When a piece of equipment is dirty, how does it get to where it needs to be cleaned? Who does that? And where does it go at that point where it's stored? Walk the path that the equipment walks. Find out if there are reprocessing activities going on that you didn't know about. I heard a story through the grapevine. I did not witness this, but a facility that had glutaraldehyde. In long-term care facility. Don't know why they had it in the first place, but it was being stored on a unit where they were trying to disinfect things on their unit. I've seen, not in a long-term care facility, in another area in a hospital, glutaraldehyde in a margarine dish. So take a look and see if what's happening is what you expect or if there's anything going on you weren't aware of. I have some pictures from a couple of tours I did, and I'm not going to identify the facilities, only thank them. They know who they are because they allowed me to come in and take pictures of the things that I could find that demonstrated bad practices. And they were so kind to let me do that and so willing to correct things that they allowed me to come in. So this is in a room that's a recreation room, a storage area off a recreation room in a long-term care facility. A lot of physiotherapy equipment. This is the clean room. Okay. I walked into that room and thought, I have no idea and no indication that I can see that this equipment has been cleaned. I assume it's been cleaned, but that's not the best way to proceed, is it? And as I looked closer at this stuff and I couldn't tell if it was clean or dirty and who was using it and how it was reprocessed and when it was going to be used, and I looked up on the side and you can see a little bottle with a cloth on top. And if we just zoom into that, what we saw there was a bottle of disinfectant with a dirty cloth sitting on it. Right, it had been used and was sitting on top waiting for its next use. And beside that, somebody's water bottle in case they got thirsty while they were going through the equipment, I guess. And then a Purell dispenser refill. And then another bottle of disinfectant solution. So we talked about, you know, what should be in that room and what shouldn't. We talked about having cloths that are recycled and making sure that equipment is a little better organized and there's some indication of cleanliness and a number of things. We had a number of conversations in that room. And I asked while I was there, well, you know, this appears to be a bottle that's diluted on site, that you probably have a concentrate somewhere that you dilute. So take me to that place. Show me how that's done. And we walked over to the janitor's closet, if you will, the dirty closet, and they showed me their system, and they spoke to me about how it was calibrated and how it was maintained and how it was monitored, and we had that conversation. And as we were standing in the room, I looked to the side, and there was a coffee cup and somebody's toiletries in the dirty janitor's room. And I thought, okay, well, there's another conversation that we'll have. So when you walk around, you find the most interesting things. The questions you need to ask yourself, the 10 questions to start, especially if you're sterilizing in your facility, to know, do you want to continue doing this? As I said, that the one facility where they had the medical records person doing sterilization, they no longer do that. They found another solution. Think of your own place. Say, are all aspects of your reprocessing being supervised and carried out by knowledgeable and trained, properly trained staff? Are they truly being carried out by those people? Has your decontamination area been approved by a reprocessing committee or somebody that's accountable? Does it conform to the requirements? And I didn't go through them, but they're listed on pages of the documents that I noted at the beginning. Have all your reprocessing policies and procedures had review by somebody who has an infection prevention and control background? Or are they just written by somebody and put into a book? Do you have written and available directions for the reprocessing of all your reusable, semi-critical, and critical devices if you have those on site, and I'm including your foot care equipment? Does your sterilizer meet PIDAC? Again, this is Ontario standards, so may not apply to all, but CSA standards more critically. And do you know how to use and maintain your sterilizer properly? Has it had any preventive maintenance done? The little sterilizer that I showed in the picture had not had any preventive maintenance done at all. So we were really going on, you know, the hope that things would work out at the end. Are any single-use critical and semi-critical medical equipment devices actually being reprocessed? Should they be reprocessed? Ask yourself that question. Have cleaning and disinfection products used for any stage of the reprocessing been approved by individuals who have reprocessing experience? Or was it just purchased by somebody who was, you know, doing general purchasing for the organization? Oh, has anybody who's doing reprocessing been vaccinated for hepatitis B? Because they should be, because they're probably handling sharp things and they're probably handling things that may have some blood or fluids, body fluids on them. So Hep B vaccination is really important for people in that position. Are your reprocessed equipment and devices stored in a way that minimizes contamination and minimizes damage? Where are those things? Do you have a sterilization process that's validated, documented, and audited? Do you meet all those requirements? And if you do, that's great, and your program's probably exceptional in that way. I think there's a couple of questions you should ask very specifically. And the first is there any possibility that there's a disposable or single-use device that I could use instead of this reprocessable device? Because to meet all the criteria that I've described, it takes a ton of human resources, and it takes a ton of ongoing maintenance. And if you can stop doing that in favor of using a single-use device, you might be actually moving in a better direction. Ask if there's a central reprocessing department in your area that could do this for you. Now, I did talk to one facility where they had the hospital doing their reprocessing, and that agreement didn't last. It fell apart for various reasons, so that may or may not work. But if either of those is actually an option, think about using it. And if neither of those is an option, you need to make sure that you follow all of the standards so that all of your equipment is properly cleaned, properly disinfected, and properly sterilized as appropriate. Sometimes purchasing individual resident care items is really the safer and, in fact, more economical approach. It's a hard sell sometimes, but it's the truth. So know what's happening in your practice setting. Do those audits. Walk around and talk to the people. Make sure that the products that are being used are the right products for the right surfaces. Involve people in your area who can help you, infection control professionals, your public health unit professionals. In Ontario, we've got regional infection control networks. There's a lot of people that can help you walk through the questions and answers that you need to address to have a safe program. Reprocessing is complex, and it carries a high risk potential if it isn't carried out properly. So we have a large weight on our shoulders to ensure that residents are safe. We can do it, but we might have choices about how to do it. So I wish you the best of luck out there.